This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to the Morning Run. It's 6 o'clock on Monday, the 14th of May. I'm Melissa Idris with Joyce Go and Sherrod Kutin this morning. Welcome back to work, everyone.
After
several days of a public holiday, although not quite us in the studio here, given that it's been quite a roller coaster these past few days of post-election coverage.
Yeah, and you know, the media, I think, all around have been working overtime. Not just the local media, but also foreign media flew in extra crew and correspondents to deal with what is a momentous shift in power in the country. I mean, we haven't seen anything like this since 1969. Remember, after the elections then, we had the riots and then we had a suspension of parliament. And then when everybody came back after, I think, 14 months or something, under the, you know, the National Operations Council, we had an entirely new political configuration. It was called Barisan Nasional.
Right? So we for us journalists, we have a ringside seat to history being made. And I know a lot of you are also grappling, trying to understand with the news flow that's coming out, you know, making headlines. I have to say, even for a news junkie like myself, trying to keep up with the developments in the political landscape has been quite a challenge this past few days. Thankfully, or not, the WhatsApp groups have kept us updated. I don't know about you guys, but my WhatsApp group has been off the charts this past few days.
It's been nonstop. And I mean, Malaysia is definitely the place to be and the topic of the moment right now. Everyone wants to talk about Malaysia and, yeah, the topics that are coming up and updates and what's real news, what's misinformation.
I've actually blocked some people and exited WhatsApp groups because of the multiple postings. So what you'll get is everybody posting the same thing. So I just decided I need to do a bit of culling, or I have to put into a cryogenic suspension a number of WhatsApp groups until things calm down, because I don't need 30 duplicates.
It's just going around. The same things, same people forwarding the same things. And today, throughout the show, we're going to bring you more news and analysis about trying to help make sense of what's happening in this new political landscape. On the Breakfast Grill today, we have Karim Razlan of the KRA Group, and he's going to be helping us dissect what to expect from the new government. So make sure you tune in for that at 8 o'clock. But looking at some of the biggest news this morning, guys, it really has to be the online backlash or online chatter when it comes to Rafizi Ramli and Wong Chen in terms of the criticism that they had for the new Prime Minister, Tun Dr. Mahathir, saying they claimed that Dr. Mahathir did not consult PKR on the appointment of ministers when the cabinet was announced, or part of the cabinet was announced on Saturday.
Well, you know, there's also pushback from members of their own party. Azmin Ali has come out, Nurul Izzah has come out in support of Tun Dr. Mahathir. Azmin Ali, who's now, of course, the Menteri Besar of Selangor, said that Rafizi Ramli's statement was his own. It was a private statement. It was wasn't reflective of the party, and therefore you it does make you pause. I mean, if it's not reflective of the party's stance, then you know, what was it? Though he seems to suggest it was.
What do you think, Joyce,
comment? A lot of people are questioning, like, why can't you guys do this behind closed doors?
It's like airing dirty laundry,
or
is
on
it?
WhatsApp, or on your WhatsApp group, right?
That's one way to utilize your WhatsApp group.
And basically, you know, because timing of it, and timing is everything, and everyone's watching you right now. I mean, the whole new government.
So do you think it was just an unfortunate case of airing dirty laundry? The timing of it.
I'm
so
not
the euphoria
sure
no,
whether
was
it on purpose or whether was it like unfortunate timing. But Hannah Yeo also came out. She tweeted this tweet on a timing and motive matter. She said that what makes a responsible, respectable politician is not just the act of speaking up. Timing and motive matter. Discipline and wisdom are the gatekeepers of our lips.
Okay. Well, I mean,
but
you know, very good.
But you know, I think Rafizi Ramli has made a reputation for himself as plain speaking, as speaking, you know, truth to power. He doesn't mince his words, and he doesn't mince his words with anybody, including those in his party, right? Mm. And so he's made enemies within his party. He, of course, is said to be the head of a faction within PKR, and PKR is seen as a very fractious organization.
Yeah. And I do think that that is particularly why the comment generated so much chatter on social media, simply because I think everyone's worried that this victory for Pakatan Harapan is a fragile victory. So any signs of cracks would be amplified and I think plays on those fears.
Well, you know, because Rafizi is not a parliamentarian. So and unless he represents some faction in parliament, there's no danger, it seems, for anything to unwind. Well, but what it is, and maybe he misunderstood the sentiment out there, because, you know, when you grandstand, as Rafizi often does, the issue is you pick up a lot of kudos, right? You pick up political capital in grandstanding.
Okay.
But this time, he's kind of misjudged it. I mean, the pushback on him has been, I think, a function of...
Do you think about Wong Chien's comments? He also came out to defend Rafizi, and he said that, you know, this unhealthy attitude of Malaysians never to question authority was the main reason why we allowed the former Prime Minister, Datuk Seri Najib Razak, to rule for 9 years.
Well, okay, so
questioning authority is what he's saying. Well, why not? Why can't we question authority?
And of course you can, and nobody's going to stop them. They're not being put in jail, right? But the question is party discipline. We expect people who, you know, operate within a party system to have some sort of discipline. I mean, if everybody is a heroic individual, then, well, that's fine. But, you know, but don't join a party.
Yes.
Be an independent. Lambang kunci.
Right? You know,
it's
so
true. Yeah. And a teamwork. It's all about teamwork. You know, at the end of the day, you need a whole team. Mm. And if you have all the superstars, then who's doing the work?
All right. It's coming up to 8 minutes past 6 o'clock. After this, we're going to talk about what's next for Najib. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Elle Green there with Let's Stay Together. What a lovely sentiment to start the work week as we, I guess, look forward to what the new government has in store for us. Let's Stay Together. That's a message to Subang MP Wong Chen and PKR Vice President Rafizi Ramli. Let's stay together despite their criticism that Dr. Mahathir did not consult PKR on the appointment of ministers. Tell us what you think. Was that airing the dirty laundry, or was it really just speaking truth to power? Tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Melissa Idris, Gerard Kutin and Joyce Goh here with you this morning.
And of course that song could be dedicated to the former Prime Minister and his wife. Let's stay together. Don't leave the country.
Oh, okay.
Stay with us.
I thought you meant like in a romantic sense. However, that is the question on everybody's lips. Where are Datuk Sri Najib Razak and Datin Sri Rosmah right now? Because over the weekend we had news that, according to Reuters, there was a raid in inverted commas, or a visit by the police.
Yeah, well, the police have come up to deny that, saying that it turns out to be a curious case of them going to the apartment, the pavilion,
right?
And apparently they went there to look at the CCTVs, but they didn't go in to raid the actual apartment unit. So it turns out to be... not sure what the story is about.
I think it was just the use of the word raid. In the original Reuters story, that I think the headline read, you know, police raid apartment linked to Datuk Seri Najib. And the police now saying, well, the use of you cannot use the word raid because in their definition, it wasn't a raid.
Okay, but what's important is what's behind this, right? The accusations, the allegations against the Prime Minister, the former Prime Minister, is that he stands accused of plunder. He basically used state institutions to steal money from the country, right? I think that's essentially it. And so you'll get all these instances, and because this goes beyond him and his wife, it includes his children and associates. And so there's a rumor mill around it, around all those people linked to the administration of Najib Razak, who might be involved in sort of abusing the public office.
Yeah, I think how this story came about for the Pavilion condominium came about was that there was an alleged police report Remember that? That was circulating on WhatsApp as
because
well.
Because there were photos of what looked like boxes of Birkin bags being transported using a government van.
Yeah, and that's how this whole story came about, whether or not that's true. But there were just photos circulating the whole.
Yeah.
Throughout
and
the
I,
whole
I guess what's going to happen over time is that we're going to have clarity on what exactly is happening. Over the weekend, we were anticipating the arrest of the former prime minister, perhaps also his wife. That did not happen. We're waiting to see. And I think this government has pledged to abide by the rule of law, to due process, and so on and so forth. So let's see what happens.
I think also, just to note, what was interesting is the timing of this so-called visit by the police, right? It happened, if you remember, during those key hours where everyone was watching or waiting for the announcement of the cabinet. So Tun Dr. Mahathir had said that they were going to make the announcement at 1, and it was then later pushed till about 5 o'clock. In between, we had at 3 o'clock the resignation of Dato' Sri Najib Razak. So I'm so curious to know about the machinations that happened behind the scenes, how they put all this into play while everyone's eyes were glued to the TV of the press conferences.
That's right, Mel. And also remember, there's the whole story about the airplane as well. And the flight, the supposed flight to Indonesia.
Everyone went to Subang in the morning.
And it proved to be true. There was a flight chartered and the flight to the airline. A plane is owned by associate of Najib Razak, Peter Sondak. Peter Sondak, because of Eagle High, and you remember that
Rajawali Group, yeah.
You remember the very famous
deal with Felda
that amounted, and losses to Felda amounting to a quarter of a billion, isn't it?
Well, really, I think in the next few days we want to look at how the rule of law will prevail, whether the rule of law could hamper the Pakatan government's ability to act swiftly in reopening looking at investigations, particularly reopening investigations on 1MDB. We, in fact, spoke to Eric Paulson, the Executive Director of Lawyers for Liberty, to ask for his opinion.
As far as institutional changes are concerned, in terms of the framework, laws and regulation, I think that will take a bit more time. But then again, Malaysia is not a failed state. I mean, it was quite close to being in a failed state. But, you know, you go to the courts, you know, generally they still work. You go to the Attorney General's Chamber's Office, it still works. And the police force, you know, they still work. So I don't think by acting quickly to prevent perpetrators from escaping the law, you know, especially, you know, an offence as large as 1MDB, I don't think that is against the rule of law.
That was Eric Paulson of Lawyers for Liberty. And I think that's a really valid point to make in terms of the role of the police in, I guess, upholding the rule of law, but also in the confidence that Malaysians have in the rule of law, to see that despite this transitional government, everything else needs to be, I guess, working, particularly the police.
Yeah, well, it's also a question of, you know, who's involved. There's an ecosystem. So we associate the problem, you know, and locate it largely around the person of Najib Razak. But there's an ecosystem around him. People benefited. And, you know, and this could be very high-ranking officials in ministries. And that's why, and remember what Tun Dr. Mahathir said at the press conference announcing the cabinet position, and more importantly, the Council of Eminent Persons. He said, we need this. We need those papers from them while we investigate the ministries, because there might be people in those ministries that are involved as well. So, you know, this ecosystem of corruption that Najib Razak allegedly presided over is what the system is going to have to deal with.
It's 6:17 right now. I just want to mention Peter Bellew tweeting in from Ireland. He just tweeted in saying, hilarious choice of music. You've done brilliantly over the last week. Enjoying the coverage at bedtime in Ireland. Keep up the good work in Malaysia. Thank you, Peter Bellew, for that message all the way in Ireland. We're going to be back with more political news and analysis, including a look at the tussles in Sabah and Sarawak. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:22 right now. That was The Undertones with It's Going to Happen. Is it going to happen for East Malaysia, for Sabah and Sarawak? Because there's a bit of a political tussle happening there. I believe Sabah has two chief ministers at the moment. And Sarawak, there's been talks of perhaps Barisan Nasional there, or the parties supporting Barisan Nasional there, jumping over to the Pakatan Harapan camp.
Well, I don't know if Sabah actually has two chief ministers, but there was the former chief minister, Musa Aman, claiming
he hasn't resigned, though, Sharad.
But he doesn't have the confidence of the assembly, and that means, you know, his government's collapsed. I don't know what the niceties are, though. I mean, there might be he needs to resign, and there might be some papers that need to be signed. Mm. But if the governor of the state has sworn in the next chief minister, then one presumes that the reign, the second reign of Musa Aman, was just 2 days long.
Which they have, right? I mean, Sabah has sworn in Mohammad Shafi Abdal.
Yes, that's right.
And this happened, and he's been declared the lawful chief minister. But again, I think Sabah BN chief Musa Aman is insisting that he's the rightful chief minister.
Yes, he is saying that nothing has changed. He has not resigned. He is still the chief minister. So now we have this curious situation of, two at the moment. I'm wondering whether they'll take shifts, maybe morning shift, night shift.
I think more akin to the Romanovs. You know, remember the Russian aristocrats who were killed off, and then suddenly this woman appears and says she's the lost daughter of the last Tsar of Russia, but she can't remember Russian for some reason.
So
many Hollywood movies later, and so basically people living a slightly deluded world in which they continue to have importance.
So what will you be watching out today for Sabah specifically, Sharad? Because are you looking out for, say, Musa Aman to officially resign before Shafi Abdal can rightfully take that post?
Well, he's already taken that post. That's the point. I mean, Shafi Abdal has been sworn in as the chief minister, right? So I believe Musa Aman's going to take this to the court, and we'll see how that works out. There's also a very important point. Musa Aman's count, I think there were four counts. They recounted the ballots four times. Now, I might be wrong on this, but it was multiple recounts, mm-hmm. and there are questions over the possibility of tampering and so on and so forth. Allegations. Remember, one of the first things that Dr. Mahathir said regarding the Sabah state elections was the possibility of fraud. And so, and it goes back to we had a lack of transparency in the elections system and the commission in particular, and that outburst that Karim Razan, who's going to be our guest later on, had, right? He says, this is all rubbish. This is rubbish and nonsense has to stop, he said, of what was happening in Sabah.
Right.
Yeah, I remember seeing this post on Facebook, my friend shared, and said, come on, we're Asians. It doesn't take us that long to count and to get it right.
Of course, playing on the stereotype that Asians are good at math. I do have to say, though, if we were to, say, look at Sarawak now, and all the rumours about Mahathir meeting with Taib there.
I don't think it's a rumour. I think it's true. It's proven to be
true.
There was a
meeting that they had
a meeting.
And in the wake of that, the chief minister Abang Johari has denied that the state government would be planning to join Pakatan Harapan. The idea essentially is if they could get Sarawak to turn, Pakatan Harapan to get Sarawak to turn, they could have 2/3 majority.
Abang Johari also did mention, though, that the state government would cooperate with the federal government, as certain things are still under the Putrajaya's jurisdiction, right? Yeah,
and also, I mean, we spoke to James Chin of the Asian University of Tasmania, and he says there are many models for cooperation. You remember, he reminded us of the case of Leo Mogi, who was a federal minister while being in a party that was in opposition to the state. Mm. So there are many ways in which to skin this cat.
And here we have Professor James Chin of the Asia Institute from the University of Tasmania talking a little bit about the Malaysia Agreement 1963 and how important that is to the Sabah-Sarawak relationship with the federal government.
It is quite clear that one of the promises made by Pakatan Harapan before the general election was that they will try to honour everything that was written down in MS-63. The expectations of the people in Sabah and Sarawak is quite straightforward. Now that we've given Pakatan the mandate, we expect Pakatan to start not only implementing the promises made MS63, they're actually looking to Pakistan to amend the federal constitution so it is consistent with some of the promises made. So, for example, they'll be looking at constitution amendments to make sure that Sabah and Sarawak is actually written in constitutionally that they will have control over things like their own education and local government issues.
That was Professor James Chin of the Asia Institute for the University of Tasmania. Now, we're going to be keeping a close eye on what's happening in Sabah, Sarawak, and bringing you up to date with the latest developments there. But a quick mention of the messages that we've gotten this morning on WhatsApp and Twitter in response to our question whether you thought Rafizi and Wong Chen's comments on Dr. Mahathir's cabinet choices was airing dirty laundry or speaking truth to power. Richie Ramesh says, we live in different times now. People are savvy and demand accountability. There's nothing wrong in questioning. Whereas Darth Vadai has tweeted saying, well, if it was the previous government, there would be no such public exchange. The new government has some lessons to learn about voicing questions or opinions. There you go. Quick one on WhatsApp by Mohan. Rafizi voicing out is the right way, avoiding BN 2.0 culture, but lashing it out publicly is not a wise choice. Tell us what you think. Our Twitter handle is at BFM Radio. Our WhatsApp number 018-789-8899. We've got the 6:30 News Bulletin coming up next with Sabrina Magdalene, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. You're listening to The Morning Run on Monday, the 14th of May, 6:40 on the clock. I'm Melissa Idris with Sharad Kutan and Joyce Go this morning. That was Brian Adams with Summer of 69. And in this new political Malaysia, landscape in Malaysia, it's been the biggest shift in power Malaysia has seen since the summer of 1969, so to speak. Sharad, we had a suspension of parliament in 1969, also a complete, complete shift in the political landscape.
Absolutely, you know, and I think people perhaps don't remember because it was a long time ago. I was 3 years old in 1969,
Politically aware.
I wasn't. I was still in diapers. But you know what I think is, and what we need to do is to go back to that time too, and to look at what happened and how it is that Barisan Nasional. Remember, it was the Alliance Party, right? It was the Alliance Coalition, rather, that was in power in the 60s. And it was only after they returned, parliament and democracy was restored, that we had the Barisan Nasional. The Barisan Nasional was this, well, you know, enlarged coalition. But so many other things changed about Malaysia and right. The way games played. One of the things, because, you know, that we forget is Kuala Lumpur and the Wilayah Persekutuan did not exist before, and it came into being. And what it did, essentially, it took all these people that would have otherwise voted in for state assembly elections for Selangor, they took them out of the game. Right. And that was an extraordinary move because it disenfranchised all the people in Kuala Lumpur. They only had parliamentary representation. They no longer had state representation. Mm. And all of us also lost out on terms of local elections as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, incredible disenfranchisement of people happened in this history. And that's, I think in time will come, we'll do that analysis as well.
Yeah, and I think history is being made here. The history textbooks are currently being written right now of what's happening in the past few days. I think one thing that, you know, there'll be a special chapter specifically for UMNO and how this would be considered a pivotal point in the way UMNO views itself and how it plans to reinvent itself. So today we have the UMNO Supreme Council meeting to discuss party elections, as we heard over the weekend with Dato' Sri Najib Razak stepping down as party president, with Dato' Sri Zaid Hamidi in party president, and Hishamuddin as in vice president.
Right. And of course, there's this other issue. Before Najib stood down, there was talk that the youth wing of UMNO was going to call for his resignation. They were going to have a press conference in front of his home, mm-hmm. only to find out that Najib was preempting them by offering to resign. The problem is that what we hear is that the top post might not be contestable. Meaning the Supreme Council will decide that there will be no contest for the top post of president and deputy president. Now, if this actually comes to pass, it means Zayed and Hisham have locked in their positions and they're not going to brook any kind of dissent within the party. Now, will Khairi Jamaluddin and all these other people in the party accept that as the terms of reference for the upcoming
elections? Well, speaking of Khairi Jamaluddin, we caught up with him over the weekend and asked him whether UMNO can survive the aftermath of a loss in federal power. Here he is sharing his thoughts.
Honestly, I don't know. We've never been in this situation before. So this is a new day for us. This is a new world for us. I call on all party members to stay loyal, to believe that we can rebuild. And I want to play a big role in rebuilding the party. Whatever that role may be will be determined later. But it's going to be in an environment which we've never been in before. So the honest answer to your question is I don't know. But I hope that party members, and you know, we are one of the biggest parties in Parliament still. We have a big membership. And although we lost comprehensively at the elections, we are still a big party with a nationwide network. And I think that's something to build on.
That was Khairi Jamaluddin, popularly known as KJ, the UMNO Youth Chief and former Minister of Youth and Sports. Interestingly, he brought up that UMNO itself is still a huge party with a huge network around the country, whether they'll leverage that to rebuild, right?
Yeah, key takeaways from that call as well is that he wants to play a big role. And also says UMNO has not been in this position. I mean, if you look at the numbers, UMNO's parliamentary seats in the peninsula fell from 73 to 47. And they also have, I think, the popular vote at RBN's popular vote at 32% is its lowest ever.
The also thing to note is there were two, I think three defections from UMNO in Johor. They tried, I believe they crossed over to the Pakatan side. There's also two members of UMNO in Perak who supported the Pakatan chief, Menteri Besar.
What does that mean?
So basically, they've done is, the thing is, all you need to do is to have the support and confidence of the members of the assembly. It doesn't go by party. It goes by a show of hands, right? Who's going to support? So these guys said, okay, we'll support the Pakatan choice for Menteri Besar because, and this is what they said in the reports, we want stability for the state instead of being in limbo, and we don't want, and they didn't say this, but they didn't want to join up with PAS to form a coalition.
Right.
So UMNO, so two members of UMNO said they're still members of Barisan Nasional, and they're not planning to leave Barisan Nasional, but they have lent their support, which has allowed the Menteri Besar from Pakatan to form the government.
I do have to say, though, I mean, over the weekend, we spoke to many commentators with, I guess, a range of outlooks over the optimism or pessimism when it comes to the future of UMNO, not just UMNO, but also Barisan Nasional as a coalition. Karim Razlan, who's going to be on the Breakfast Grill later on from KRA Group, he was very optimistic about the future of UMNO. He thinks that UMNO can rebuild itself from the ashes, so to speak. However, I'm just wondering whether the prognosis is as optimistic for Barisan Nasional as a coalition, or have we seen the end of MCA and MIC and Gerakan?
Well, there's one thing to note is that Barisan Nasional is controlled two states. They have Perlis and they have Pahang. And that's very important, right? So the longevity of coalitions of state means is dependent often, at least in the Malaysian game, on this kind of fact. The other thing is the wealth of the party. And the party finances, I think it could be a fascinating discussion. I think
party finances.
Because who controls? And, you know, party finances for UMNO have changed. Who control, whether they use proxies or whether they had an internal, you know, financial system and all that. Who's the party treasurer? These are the stories I hope the Malaysian media breaks in the coming weeks to get us a deeper sense. It's not just because it's a huge amount of wealth, we're assuming. But if it's all parked under Najib Razak, they have a problem.
All right, it's 6:47 right now. After this, we're going to be looking at Tan Sri Tony Fernandez apologising for buckling under pressure from the BN government. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was not us. That was not me, Melissa Idris, Sharad Kutin, or Joyce Go.
But was that Spanish?
I'm not sure. That was Steely Dan, actually. Steely Dan singing, "Only a Fool Would Say That." as we lead into our next news item of Tan Sri Tony Fernandez and his comments to, in fact, he came up with a video posted in his social media profile on an explanation of why he, I guess, buckled under pressure from the Barisan National Government. Here he is.
When the Rakyat came to us asking for more flights at a low fare, I decided that was the right thing to do. I knew it wouldn't be popular with the government, but I felt as an airline, we had to serve the people. So we put on 120 extra flights. Unfortunately, that put me under more pressure when it was realised by the government that we were ferrying so many voters. Within 24 hours, we were summoned by the Malaysian Aviation Commission, MAFCOM, and told to cancel all those flights. That put us under, again, tremendous pressure. So, foolishly, I thought by doing the video, which I felt was fairly neutral and factual, would appease the government.
That was Tan Sri Tony Fernandez of Air Asia speaking about the reasons why he participated in BN's propaganda video. What do you guys make of his, confession, video confession?
I think one thing to note is that expression, I felt it was fairly neutral and factual. Now, this, I think, people on social media have taken exception to, because whatever he says about the circumstances, his own perception of the messaging, when he said that the Prime Minister only cared, you know, cared primarily for the interests of the people. Now, if he thinks that is neutral and factual, then I think he's sadly mistaken. I don't think anybody would, most people, if you go by the votes that people have cast, would agree with him that that statement was neutral.
Yeah, also his allegations against a MAFCOM, I think that was a big red,
that was
red
big, wasn't
light,
it?
Right?
So
yeah.
Claiming that MAFCOM asked him to stop the
ferrying those voters. And MAFCOM has come up with a comment to say that they're going to look into this. And definitely all eyes will be on them to see, you know, what comes up from their investigations, because those are very huge allegations.
Serious allegations.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the thing about it is that I'm not particularly interested to follow, you know, the fate of Tony Fernandez post-GE14. I mean, I think he's going to survive. I mean, these people do, right? People like him survive. They're rich and they're massive and they're important, right? So to the economy,
right?
So I don't think that's my opinion.
Okay.
I think is noteworthy is that he's part of a class of people who've now had to deal with the positions they took publicly in the past. So the Doyo and the whoever, Anas Zubeidi's, all those people who have now coming out to say, trying to make sense of their former positions, right? And they will say, no, we took a middle of the road, we were moderate in our positions, that we always argued on the basis of rationality. In fact, whatever it is, there are people, and he's just one of the many coming out to, you know, mea culpa a bit, and which is say, I'm sorry or I'm at fault, but I'm also, let me understand, I wasn't that bad.
Well, don't you think that Tan Sri Rafida Aziz coming out to say that, well, you know, Tony took the punches for me being vocal while being chairman of Air Asia, do you think that had anything in a way to kind of allay the public criticism towards Tony?
I think that carried weight. I think that saved Asia and Tony Fernandez. I mean, we'll look at the stock later on when it goes live at 9 o'clock when the markets come on. But I think Tan Sri Rafida's comment saved him. I'm not so sure whether Tony Fernandez's own video saved himself, because there were still a lot of comments after he came out with the video. People are saying that, you know, in 08, he was supporting Sharizat as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Sorry, let me just correct myself. Tan Sri Rafida Aziz, chairman of Air Asia X.
Well, okay,
right.
But the thing is this, right? The stock market is not a plebiscite. It's not a public, you know, not everybody
it's
gets
not a court of public opinion.
Yeah.
It's of investors, right? So what I do think, though, you know, is that, and one can understand there were pressures, there was that ecosystem, and you needed to schmooze and do all these things in order to get what, you know, where you got. But that marks people who have social courage from that lot. So Tony is a part of that lot who succumbed to those pressures, and we understand what those pressures are. The people who had social courage, the people who stood up, despite despite the pressures on themselves, despite their self-interest, they're the ones who are special.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, there were so many other businessmen who opted not to buckle under the pressure.
Well, Stanley Tai, right? I mean, another, wasn't it Supermax?
Yes. Sorry.
Yeah, he said sorry. Mm. And he came out and he had a press conference. He said, you know, the federal opposition had, you know, changed his mind or somehow did some magic. I don't know what it was. He was trying to explain that he was under their spell. And then he came out and publicly supported the Barisan National Government.
Yeah,
I mean, he's right. I mean, he has a right to do that. What I'm just saying is that now he's going to have to explain.
Yeah, and there are others, as you mentioned, Shira, who have stayed quiet, but they also feel the pressure. I mean, look at the amount of tax investigation cases that we saw last year. Mm. The amount of tax audit investigations, the amount of stories that have come out, and tycoons and companies that were investigated had to pay a lot of extra tax.
Well, Dr. Mahathir has come out to say that he will be looking again at those cases, right, Joyce?
Yes.
Right. I mean, the thing is, at the end of the day, you know, people are, I'm assuming, and I've noted that people say, you know, we should not fly AirAsia and boycott, you know, Tony Fernandez and all that. But at the end of the day, people are probably going to choose an airline that makes sense to them in terms of convenience, in terms of their pocket.
That's the
bulk of people.
So the business may not suffer, but what I think will suffer is brand Tony. You know, Tony as the man of the people, Tony as a self-made businessman. Would brand Tony suffer from this series of very public videos and flip-flops that he's done? And that's a big question.
Yeah, and also if he wants to be, you know, a thought leader. And that might be. But, you know, I think we're essentially a very forgiving public, Malaysians.
Well, Andrew G has tweeted in saying that if Tony is sincere now, we'll go and report to MACC and police if he was pressured by agencies of the previous government. So I guess to make it official if, in fact, what he's claiming is true. Well, tell us what you think. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got the 7 o'clock news headlines coming up next, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.